Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 111 of the Electrical Podcast. You're making noises there.
I just agreed with you that it's 111.
Right. Carrying on the German fighter theme, the HE111 was a contestant. A contestant in the competition, which finally saw the contract awarded to the BF-109, of course. But although some said it was a superior aircraft, I think there was somebody commented would love to talk to me about German fighter aircraft. Anyway, we'll leave that there for now.
Did you know 111 is an angel number?
Is it? What does that mean?
So certain numbers have very significant,
of course they do,
magical powers.
Oh yeah.
And according to the Cosmopolitan magazine, 111 signifies that things in your life are coming to divine alignment.
Okay.
The process of everything lining up for the best is underway, and you're meant to have faith and stand strong in the midst of the process.
Okay. Cosmopolitan still going? That's a remarkable thing in itself. Anyway, this week I thought we'd be a bit more after last week's talk of kittens and sealing wax and magical things. I thought we'd drill down to grim left-wing politics this week.
Oh, I've got, if that gets dry, I've got
20
tips to spice up your love life here. Just in case we need it.
Yeah, that's very on brand for this podcast.
Ooh, a lot of things about nipples. Maybe not. Let's carry on. What were you saying?
I think I need a pause now. I just had an email steering me to the blog of my personal friend and a friend of the podcast, Carn Ross. Former high-flying British diplomat, whistleblower over the fact that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And since then, a man is an advocate for, we had him on talking about Rojava in northeast Syria, the enclave, the feminist anarchist enclave in north Syria.
Mm-hmm.
But also Khan himself is somebody who is, politically very, very articulate about anarchist philosophy, really. But anyway, he was just, I had noticed kind of out the corner of my eye a news item somewhere saying that there'd been fighting between government forces and what they termed the Kurds in Aleppo, and that large numbers of Kurdish civilians had been expelled from Aleppo. And what the substance of Khan's blog is that this is, in fact, the government forces under al-Sharaa, we call him now. We used to call him Jolani, didn't we? We call him the artist formerly known as Jolani.
Mm, the arsonist formerly known as.
That this is an attack by the government forces on the PKK, on the Kurdish, on Kurdish forces that they think they have successfully driven them out of. Aleppo, and their next target will be Rojava. He says that they can only have done this with the permission of the Turks, and of course Erdogan hates Kurdistan and would like to obliterate Rojava, and probably the Israelis as well. I mean, the Syrian government is obviously being forced to. There's a lot of pressure on the Kurdish government to accept the Israeli invasions, incursions onto their land.
Syrian government,
right, yeah.
They're very keen to get Western acceptance and, get all their sanctions taken off, and like bit by bit, America has been taking sanctions off of Syria.
Yeah.
That's been
in all fairness, actually, Khan says that the United States is actually trying to broker peace talks between the government forces and the Turkish forces in opposing those in Rojava. That the Kurdish forces have tried to, have said that they would integrate their militias into the Syrian army, but the al-Shabaab So there's that government, the Syrian government, has gone very quiet on this. And, you know, what we all feared, really, I don't know how you feel about this now, that what the likely trajectory was that Yawal Sharar, as a former Islamist, that he hasn't really changed his stripes, and certainly there are a lot of people in his coalition who are just straight out ISIS, Al-Qaeda, whatever, Daesh, and that what you are going to get eventually is certainly the core of Syria being controlled by an Islamist government.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't with Daesh. Al-Qaeda formerly.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely got fucking hell. Yeah, he tried his best to clean up and be a presentable figure. And early on in his, rulership, it seemed positive because he was going around Syria shaking hands with all the different factions and promising peace and coexistence with the Kurds, with the Christians, with all that. So we started seeing, nasty signs when there were clashes and some massassacres of Alawite communities.
Yes, in Latakia. And
that was quite, they did a pretty good press, a publicity job on that, because there was some evidence of it being the result of ambushes. You know, their soldiers were being ambushed, and also the other excuse they had were that it was just the actions of small groups of people who were very bitter and angry with the Alawites, and they were now finding themselves in a powerful position.
Because you have to say that the Assad clan were Alawites themselves.
Yes, so Bashar al-Assad was an Alawite. We were a very small minority sect of Islam in Syria. But, he did not represent all Alawite people. He was just, he had his own little clan, and the Alawites weren't even, the Alawites who were being attacked and killed weren't running around with Bashar flags and doing protests or anything. They were just living their lives. Another excuse was that some of the soldiers were just taking it upon themselves to go out there and cause this violence. And Al-Sharar was very much like, we are going to discipline these people. They went against my orders and we are doing an investigation and all that. And it seemed to all just be covered up and pushed aside. And so for the last few months, it seemed to be pretty stable in Syria. You know, Western sanctions have been slowly getting peeled off. Hopefully, over time, to reveal some semblance of normality and even some prosperity and progress in Syria, because that place has just, the economy has just been stagnant for so long, and no industry, no growth at all. And now if this really goes much further, he's just really fucking it. He's fucking the Syrians, and he's showing people wanted to believe that there was a positive side to this guy and that he was actually a changed man. And I just, this is all new to me. You know, I'm just reading it now about it. And you told me about it before we started recording, and I can't say I'm that shocked, but I am pissed off. You know, I'm fucking pissed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you look at it, as I say, Turkey is an extremely malign force in Syria. Obviously, Israel is a malign force across the world. And, you know, their interests align with the new government of Al-Sharar. And I think it's... the future really doesn't look, the near future anyway, doesn't look, it's what I think a lot of us on the left predicted, really. It doesn't look too rosy. But it's, I think it's important that if people are interested, that they do what they can to find out more about Rojava. I mean, it is one of the kind of contradictions. There was a highly hypocritical kind of intervention, both from J.K. Rowling, the... arsehole,
notorious,
and Sarah Vine saying, you know, over the left, silent on, you know, the killings in Iran. You know, why didn't you say anything about that? Whereas, you know, you're very vocal on Palestine. Of course, neither Sarah Vine nor J.K. Rowling have ever said anything about the genocide in Gaza or the West Bank. So, you know, it makes them, for a start, hypocritical. But sometimes we are, I mean, the reason that we campaign, you know, and this is when people say to me, you know, why are you going about Palestine? Why didn't you mention, you know, East Timor or, you know,
The Uyghurs.
It's because the thing about Israel is us. We are not carrying out, the RAF is not carrying out surveillance flights for the Uyghurs or for the Indonesians oppressing the people of East Timor. You know, there is not Labour friends of China. There is not conservative friends of China. Israel and its interests infiltrates every aspect of our society and pollutes it and makes it, poisons our political discourse. You see, for instance, our Home Secretary this week, Farmer, putting a massive amount of interest and political capital into the issue of whether some racist football fans from a foreign country should be allowed to come to Britain. I mean, presumably the Home Secretary has more pressing issues than whether, you know, Maccabi Tel Aviv fans could come to watch them play Aston Villa.
Four months ago,
a massive amount of political capital and political interest being expended on this parliamentary committee, staffed almost entirely by Labour and Conservative Friends of Israel. And, you know, it really, and also, you know, they're a threat to the chief constable of the West Midlands for not allowing, again, these racist thugs to come to Britain. It's extraordinary. And that's why we protest about the actions of Israel, because Israel is us and we can do something. We can affect the outcome. And I think we do. We do at least limit the, I think if we weren't protesting, how much worse things would be. We can, it is our moral responsibility to fight against the interests of the actions of, you know, the racist genocidal apartheid Israeli state, because it is us. And so it's hypocritical of J.K. Rowling and fucking Sarah Vine. Incidentally, I did Broadcasting House with years ago and seemed like the saddest woman I've ever met, really.
Which one? Kind of
Sarah Vine. She was married to Michael Gove, and obviously that's more of a... Whoa. That's more of a penance than having your liver pecked out by ravens, really, to be shackled in marriage to that terrible clown-faced creep. Anyway, but, you know, they're the hypocrites, really, for saying that, you know, we remain silent on Iran. Nevertheless, it would be nice to have a country that, you know, you do find yourself in a way, I mean, you do find yourself, you know, in these kind of conflicts that where the West acts against countries that fall outside its interest groups, like Iran, like Russia, like China. It'd be nice to have a country that you could admire wholeheartedly, really. You know, when you talk about Iran, you have to condemn the mullahs, you have to condemn the extraordinary violence and corruption of the, you know, the IRGC and the Khomeini. Of course, after he came to power with the help of, you know, with the 50-50 help of the socialists and communists, then turned around and killed them all. So we've got more reason to hate Khomeini in a way than his heirs, Khamenei, than
Uruguay. I've always said Uruguay.
To admire.
Yes. Yes.
But let's circle back to that. Yeah, it's quite interesting, Uruguay, isn't it? Because it's two official languages are Spanish, but also Guarani, which is the native indigenous population's language. And it's a place where people say they're happier than anywhere else. And
yep.
Don't know that much.
Stable country, progressive politics, cultural sophistication. I'm just reading the overview here on Google. It's got strong agricultural industry. The leadership there just seems to be totally like on the level, man. They've legalized cannabis and same-sex marriage was legalized years and years ago. Human rights champions.
So it's amazing that they've managed to stay out the sights of the US then, really.
Well, yes. I guess then natural resources aren't a big kind of honey trap.
Well, they're not explicitly socialist, but just kind of sensible.
Let's see. They've got a blend of cultures there and everyone seems to get along really well. I might fucking move there, to be fair.
Yeah, so go there.
If they don't nuke South
America. Puedo hablar español muy bien.
The first ever World Cup was held there. It just looks like a beautiful fucking country. And there are flights for as little as £700 to Uruguay. I'm going to look up.
Maybe we could get somebody on to talk about Uruguay. £700, you say, why, Talal? That's a bargain. Which airline is this?
I've gone off that page.
What is extra legroom?
Quite an affluent country. Center left government.
Right.
But the old guy, yeah, Jose Mujica was the long-serving president, who's the guy who got me into Uruguay, because he used to, even while he was president, would travel around the country on his no security, and he'd drive a little VW Beetle, like an old banger.
Made in Mexico, presumably.
And he'd just drive it around and make state visits and stuff, and would dress very casually and was just super cool. And
sounds good. Well, you had, anyway, if we can just circle back to Rojava.
I want to make 2 points on what you were saying about, yes. Another reason why so many people, I guess, are so much more vocal about Palestine, as well as it being our problem, is that it's just a very clear cut. Yes. It's very hard to, you know, there's not much nuance. It's an apartheid state. There's a genocide going on. If you're denying it, you're clearly delusional. You know, it's very clear cut. And I know that Iran is just, it's not the most nuanced or messy topic, but for some people it's too much. You know, it's got more nuance to it.
Well, it has.
People are scared of talking about it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and you said there's no Western involvement, but, you know, some people are claiming that the riots was started, instigated by Western or Israeli Mossad agents.
Yeah, Mossad were bragging that they were in the crowd.
Or at least they are in there kind of inflaming it, making it worse, or making, you know, there are some things that in the protests, you know, I've seen footage of like mosques being burnt or like shrines being burnt and like, you know, tourist things that there's no reason to attack if you're a protester.
Yeah.
But you have to think that, I don't know, you have to remember that the majority of people have been protesting this government for a very long time.
Yes, it's a
with or without Mossad's help. And the majority of these protesters can't all be Mossad, you know? They're trying to fight for their liberation. And
No, we shouldn't. You know,
it's gone to breaking point. I don't think we should be scared of talking about it.
Because we also have to add, you know, that, yeah, they wouldn't be there if we hadn't deposed Mossadegh in 1953 and installed the Shah.
Indeed.
So we always have to add that health warning.
And what was it, the 1979, the revolution against them, against the Shah? Was it 79 or 78 when the Ayatollah first came in?
Yeah.
And I think there must have been some Western involvement in that as well, right? Or
he was living in Paris. I think it was largely, as far as I know, it was largely, you know, indigenous, really. It came from, I don't know, maybe some of our listeners know better than we do, but I think it was largely, it was so, you know, the it was so broad that it managed to achieve its aims without any Western interference. But I don't know. I mean, Khomeini was living in Paris and was, you know, obviously with the complicity of the West. I don't know.
Well, I know that the Palestine crowd is split on it, because a lot of them view Iran as allies, because they are enemy. I'm talking of the Islamic regime. They are enemies of Israel.
Yeah.
And very vocal, very, you know, they're one of the few enemies of Israel that actually has any power against them. So they consider Iran, therefore we should protect the regime and all that, and they must be our friend because they're the enemy of our enemy. And I completely do not go along with that.
No, I would agree.
It's too simplistic to just say enemy of my enemy. It's such a stupid argument.
Absolutely.
There's more nuance to it than that, and they are bad to their people. So whether they are bad to Israel or not, and that's even questionable, you know, they must be in cahoots at times.
Probably on some level, yeah.
You know, it's too suspicious, some of the things that happen. Even the missiles back and forth between Iran and Israel, it seems sometimes a bit convenient.
Yeah.
Fishy. And they're too powerful to be... Anyone that powerful is not a good guy, full stop. You know, I don't trust anyone with that much power.
No. It's Salal saying all this stuff, by the way, not me.
Good. I think we can both agree to send solidarity to the freedom fighters and anyone looking for freedom and peace in their life.
Yes, and it would be wonderful to see a kind of peaceful transition to a democratic, or, you know, more democratic government in Iran. I don't know how that's going to be achieved, frankly. I think you maybe, you know, you're going to get, you maybe get, I mean, Iran is obviously very different to Syria, but, you know, you wonder really what the good outcome can be in the short term. It would be amazing to see, you know, the mullahs and the Revolutionary Guard toppled and a genuine government and national unity that still opposed Israel to be elected. But whether all the various forces
will allow that,
will ever allow that to happen, I think is...
It's
moot, really. It's,
to be extremely cliched, I think we're at a precipice here and a crossroads, and it could go either fucking
way. A bus stop.
We're at a bus station, and whichever bus we get on.
Interchange. We can get the metro or a bus to the outer suburbs or a tram. I'm sorry, what was your point?
Deciding whichever choice we make will lead us to drastically different future for our planet.
Yeah.
I obviously hope there's no Western intervention. I hope the people of Iran are completely in power and choose their own future and don't have anything imposed upon them. But looking at the way Trump is behaving, pretending he's the leader of the world, I don't know. We could be inching closer to World War III. I said it.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Or just another Iraq 2.0 or whatever.
You know? Yeah, yes, I think Iraq 2.0 is perhaps a likelier. So actually, I'd be interested to know what's going on in Iraq, because I always thought of it soon, because Iraq is a sheer majority nation, that they would naturally align themselves, the government would align itself with Iran, really, but that doesn't really seem to be happening. I don't know what's going on in Iraq at all, really. And I'd like to know if anybody's got any insight. I think we've exhausted that topic. And we're not, but, you know, I mean, J.K. Rowling said...
Hold on. There's Kurdish groups in Iraq seeking to cross into Iran. Kurdish separatist groups, they're trying to cross the border into Iran, possibly to help with the clashes there. What side do you think they would be on?
Well, obviously anti-government, but not anti-Islamist as well, I would guess, really, which is a good thing, I guess.
Yeah, but Kurdish Islamists are not as... hopefully they could be, you know, communist, feminist Kurds.
Yes, could be our people. SDF.
I thought there'd be more. That's all I got for Iraq. Yep, that's all I've got for Iraq. That is, okay. We have reached the end of the cul-de-sac there officially.
Yeah, I thought this might keep us going longer, but I don't.
Well, know. No, this Khan Ross blog is very interesting. Yeah. It's really, really well written, well thought out. He's obviously an expert on the region. I trust him more than I trust Al-Shara and all that crew.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. And if you feel, you know, you want to find, you know, apart from joining Labour Friends of Uruguay, if you're interested, if you want to try and promote a better world, I would encourage you to get involved in.
I haven't made any notes so far, but that's the note I'm making. Labour Friends of Uruguay. Go to khanross.com or just search Khan Ross blog and you'll find it. I don't know why I've not been subscribed to that since earlier on. Shall I read a bit of it or have we moved?
Yeah, we could. I don't know if you want. Topic? Yeah, I've got nothing else. I feel like I've ground to a halt, right?
No, you haven't. You're great. You're in your fucking prime. You're great.
I just meant now. I didn't mean in my life.
No, yeah, but I also mean now. All right, let's do an improv scene based on all that we've just talked
about. That's not. How many people say to me, whatever you do, never do Dungeons and Dragons ever again?
Well, I get the opposite. So fuck them. Being divisive is good. I do get the opposite. What would you like if we did it again? What would you like?
I don't know. I didn't. I was emotionally checked out for that.
I know, but I did like a horror story, very cliched horror, but involving lots of different intellectual properties that you've been involved with over the years, and it had a Jeremy Corbyn Your Party, a spin on it. So we've covered all that, and so if there was, you were being forced to do another kind of role playing game. What would your dream setting be? Would you like?
I don't know what's possible.
Do you want it to be cowboys? Do you want it to be in space? Do you want it to all be in the Indiana Jones universe? Like what? Let's start there. What world would you like to be in into? If you could choose any kind of your favorite genre or whatever, you know.
Kind of Austro-Hungarian Empire. Right about the start of the First World War.
Okay. What, you want to like be one of Franz Ferdinand's bodyguards or something?
Yeah, some, you know.
Okay, Austro-Hungarian Empire.
Yeah, it's just an interesting, just a fascinating. You know, I've been recently been in Budapest and Vienna and so on, Linz. It's an interesting, an extraordinary crossroads, a hodgepodge of ideas, you know, where you go. I always said, I remember I did a bit on Sandwich Bar, I think, about every good or bad idea of the sort of affected the 20th and 21st century has come out of Vienna. You know, I mean, obviously Zionism was invented in Vienna, Freudianism.
Invented
in Vienna, you know, Einstein and the atomic bomb was invented in Vienna. Marxism wasn't really invented in Vienna, but you could say, you know, you could pretend it was.
Like shutters, right?
What those shutters?
Like Viennese shutters, isn't that a thing? Viennese windows?
Are they? Oh.
What am I thinking of?
I don't know. It sounds... Venetian blinds. I think
Venetian blinds. That's what I'm thinking of. Bloody,
they're
this planet.
Yeah, Birmingham has more miles of canals than Vienna. Venetian blinds, yes. Viennese blinds. Play the vaults. Oh, God, by the way, talking of sort of Austria, we watched that Sky Amadeus. Oh, did I talk about this?
Yeah, you said it was awful.
I seem obsessed. Yeah, it was awful. Yeah, I seem obsessed with it.
And so my aim is, you know, if we're going to do it once a year, or at least once again at Halloween this year, and for the haters, just skip the episode or hate listen to it. I know you are masochists who love to listen to things just so that you can hate it. That's fine too. I don't give a fuck. But my personal mission is to create one that you will actually be engaged with and want to explore and talk to characters and you know, actually enjoy it. So if we set it in the Austro-Hungarian
Empire, Hungarian Empire, 1914, close to collapse.
1914. Who would you like to be playing in that?
I be the Serbian? Well, it's a Sarajevo, obviously, but not Vienna. But you know, the Serbian assassin Princip.
The guy who actually killed
as you, Franz Ferdinand, with his 9mm Browning in 1910 pistol, of course.
Okay.
Favorite pistol of the anarchist.
Okay, this is amazing. So you'll be the guy who kills Franz Ferdinand.
Yeah, maybe I'll be Brand Princip, in Sarajevo. That's the First World War. Rob Newman had a great, do you remember Rob Newman had that line about?
Oh, my God.
The First World War started because Archduke Ferdinand was assassinated. Nobody's that popular. which I think is a great line.
Yep.
Yeah, all right, yeah. All right, so next.
Alan Carr is pretty popular.
Alan Carr? What, in Austro-Hungarian Empire?
No, like now.
All right. I think that was a story that was in, right?
The joke that killed a podcast. Go on, carry on.
You're advocating for the murder of Alan Carr.
No, just making a joke that he's as popular as he's so popular it would start a world war if you killed
him. If a Serbian nationalist killed him, possibly.
What is wrong with you?
A lot of confusion. I don't know. I'm casting around now for where were we anyway?
Where were we?
This can't be good.
You played Dr. Maverick in Marple in 2009.
Yes.
Tell us about that, Alexei.
Oh yes. Mm-hmm. So they treated you very well, the principals, I remember. You got your own car, drive you up and down to the set, really, if you know, in a few hundred yards. It was a very nice cast. There was Maxine Peake, Brian Cox Lumley. Before he was, Brian Cox tried to sell me his house in Camden.
Oh.
He apparently had a kind of a southwestern kind of New Mexico adobe style house in Camden he was trying to get rid of. I remember for some reason, me going on about how Fraser had gone off towards the end and him getting very grumpy, and then realised, of course, that he was in it when Fraser really went off when Daphne got married to Niles. Do you remember there was Daphne's family, which was the father? Everybody was doing these extraordinary random accents. The brother, one of the brothers was Anthony LaPaglia from Australia. Brian Cox was the father. Millicent Martin was the mother. Another of the brother was Robbie Coltrane, who talked in sort of cod nonsense and Richard E. Grant, all doing, none of them doing accents anywhere near Manchester, really. But I'm Sean Hughes, and of course Joan Collins. I would say I had a scene. I don't really have a scene with Joan Collins, but there's a scene where we're in a sort of lobby and a body is cast. A body is taken past us and we look at each other. And I would say in the breaks I told her about Marxism. Which I didn't really, but I couldn't actually think of anything to say to her. But I'm good in it, actually. I'm really, for once, I'm really, you know, I like to dwell on my failures, but I'm actually rather good in that. It was, you know, it was when I just used to randomly accept, you know, the odd kind of acting job, really.
2009. Yeah, that was definitely
Alex Jennings.
You were doing lots of bit parts.
Yeah.
Sean Hughes.
Oh, the late Sean Hughes. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I did get some stand up out of it because the woman who was my driver, her son was something. It was. We shot it in 2008, just at the time of, you know, the collapse of Bear Stearns and Goldman Sachs and all that.
Mm.
And my driver said, her son was at something in the city, and she said, over here, Bank of America have just bought Meryl Streep. And so I got some stand up out of that. Really.
Great.
I think you can watch it. It's on ITV3. It's on, you know, I like to talk about my great shame, which is, of course, Lovejoy and the Napoleonic commode.
Yes.
But also that my episode, They Do It With Mirrors, I think it's called, is it?
Exactly. They Do It With Mirrors, season 4, episode 3.
Yeah. I'm good in it, really. So,
and who's Dr. Maverick?
He's a sort of dodgy psychiatrist, I think. I can't really remember.
See if I can find a picture of you. Oh, there you are.
Like Sigmund Freud, don't I?
You've got a little Freudian bow tie and glasses on, tiny round glasses.
Yeah.
You're pulling a nice face in that photo. What that?
Yeah.
Like listening. You're good at listening.
Yeah.
On screen. Do you find that's the most important part of acting, is listening?
It is, yeah. I mean, it's not the most important part. The most important part is acting. But, actually listening to what the other character is saying rather than, you know.
Waiting to speak
is, yes, I would say to all my, if I had an acting workshop, definitely, that is, you should be listening.
Yes, and that stretch between 2008 and, I'd say, 2014, you had a good stretch there.
I was in New Tricks.
Saying yes to things.
Yeah.
New Tricks. Oh, with my old drama teacher.
Which one?
Amanda Redmond. She's from Ealing, where I'm from, and she used to run, she still runs it, a drama school out there, a Saturday drama school called Artist Theatre School. And we would go every Saturday and learn the tricks of the trade, and we'd have special workshops. People would come in and do workshops, and what's his name? Ray Winston came in once to teach us a scene from Scum. And it was my turn to play Ray Winston. You know, we'd all take turns playing the different parts in this scene. And I remember doing the scene. It's when he's first being brought into the juvenile prison and the borstal. And being shown around. And I was doing the scene. Ray was going, stop, stop. Everyone fucking stop. You, come here. And I come right up to him. And he looks at me and goes, do you understand how fucking terrified you'd be coming into this fucking borstal? Any second, some cunt could come up. I'm like 15 years old, by the way. Any cunt could come up and do you in. You get stabbed. You get fucking done in. You get your head bashed in. Like, all these guys around you, these cunts around you, they're the most evil cunts in the world. They've been in here for murder and rape and this and blah, blah, blah. And you're just an innocent kid. You've been brought in. Do you understand how fuck? He's like screaming at me, looking at me dead in the eye until I start quivering. And my lips start shaking. My eyes start filling with tears. And he goes, yeah, now you get it. Go again from the top. Action. Right? And then I start the scene again. With the fear of God in me, and he goes, that's better, that's more like it, son, that's what it's like, very good, very good. So his method of acting was to just genuinely terrify children until they look the part. That was fucking cool. I'll never forget the flecks of spit flying out of his while he screamed at me. You were in New Tricks. Who did you play in that?
God knows. I've got very little memory of it. I know Dennis Waterman, who I think I've said terrible things about, it, lent me his Jaguar and his driver to take me home.
Ooh. You were finished before him, I'm presuming. So he's like, yeah. Love Means Nothing in Tennis was the title of the episode.
Yeah, I was some kind of sports agent, I think.
Series 9, Episode 6.
I remember, because Amanda Redman kind of basically bossed the set, really. I remember I had two scenes. My first two scenes were in a prison, an interview room. I think I was being interviewed by them or detectives or somebody. They're quite long scenes. So I thought, well, I'll learn the first one. And then in the break when they reposition, I'll learn the second one sort of thing, or, you know. And so Amanda Redmond got in. She just sort of tore the script in half and said, oh, let's just shoot all these as one, shall we? So, yikes.
Shit.
There's always, I mean, especially when you don't do much acting, learning lines. I hate learning lines, really. I mean, my tendency is always to not say them quite as they're written, really. But, you know, it's always once you get out of, you know, get out of practice, really, it's difficult. You know, the business of learning lines is something that you get better at the more you do, really.
That's true.
And so I was, you know, I was always kind of rusty, really. Yeah, but she just said, yeah, we'll shoot all this as one, shall we?
Can I ask how you got around that?
I think I just very quickly learned the lines. And it wasn't, I think, I mean, it wasn't a show where, you know, I think you could get away with substituting, you know, the odd wrong word. It wasn't, nobody was that, you know, reverential towards the script, really. So you could, you could get it more or less right, and that was good enough for them, kind of thing, really, fortunately. Yeah.
Now, I think we have talked about it a bit before, but I've just come across this How to Build a Girl from 2019, where you played Karl Marx.
Yes.
And the lead actor in that is, she's brilliant. She's so good. I just watched Lady Bird the other day.
Yeah.
And I think she's in some other stuff.
But very much a darling of the indie cinema crowd.
Yes, big indie. Beanie Feldstein.
Beanie Feldstein, indeed.
Booksmart. Yeah, Booksmart. I love that film as well.
Yeah.
Driveway Dolls sucked. That's a terrible movie. But how did that film go? How was its reception?
Well, it's interesting, really, because it's based on that Raised by Wolves, the woman who was the Times columnist who was brought
Caitlin
up in
Moran.
A cancer state. Caitlin Moran, yeah. It's based on a book of hers, a kind of memoir, really. I just did it because Alison Owen, the producer, is a friend of mine, and she just said, do you want to... You can tell how good Alison is because she's never really asked me to be in anything or ever said she'd make any scripts that I've ever written. She's mother, of course, of Lily Allen, Alfie Allen.
Oh, right.
And she just said, do you want to... Will you come on? The characters on the wall talk to the Caitlin Moran character, as it were, and she has this wall of heroes, and I'm Karl Marx, and I only had like one line. I'm painted grey, and I have one line, which I can't remember what it is, really. But various other people. Lily Allen was there. She plays Elizabeth Taylor or somebody.
Cleopatra.
Dawn was in it. And yeah, there was a load of people. We knocked it off very quickly. I think in all fairness, I think that it really, the Beanie Feldstein being, I don't know where she's from in the States, but, you know, that her Wolverhampton accent was pretty perfect, but she put in so much effort into maintaining that accent that she couldn't act, really.
Oh, no.
So her performance was kind of lacking in any depth because everything was going into just You know, it's too much of a stretch, really, to ask an American to carry a film playing somebody who very much has to be from Wolverhampton. You know, it's the casting was wrong, really. She should never really have been asked to do that. It's too much, really.
Oh yeah, top comments. Having a 27-year-old American play a Northern English teen is complete miscast. Very distracting.
Yeah. It's not Northern, of course, it's the Midlands, Black Country. But yeah. Yeah. Well, I would go along with that. It's impossible. And it's just...
Well, there is like somebody trying to hold. But you're saying she was distracted the whole time, just focusing so much on
Well, I think all their energy was going into just getting getting the accent right, you know. I suppose it was such a stretch for her that, you know, there was no room left for acting, you know, for making the character real. It was an absurd piece of casting.
Absurd. Just quickly checking to see if she's a Zionist or not.
Yes, I think she may.
Because I love her, and it really, anytime I like anyone, I have to just find out.
I think she's married to a British woman, isn't she?
Oh, yeah. So you are, as of recording, you're going to be doing a nice event this evening.
Yes. Too late for it. Yeah.
But you're going to be... Oh, thank God I brought that up, because it just reminded me that you're also up for an award at the Comedy...
Oh, yes.
British Comedy Guide. All right, I put a call out on the social media, but I also need you guys listening to this to go to comedy.co.uk. It's a simple website, comedy.co.uk. It's the British Comedy Guide website, and they are doing their Comedy Awards 2025. And guess what? Alexi Sales Imaginary Sandwich Bar is up for award. I think it's the best entertainment radio show. And therefore, by default, it's also up for best show as well. I'm going
to... Yeah, I want to get me an award. I want an award.
It's in the shortlist.
I haven't had an award for ages. I want an award.
We're running software to detect vote rigging. Well, does it count as rigging if I just tell all your fans to go and vote? Please go to comedy.co.uk/awards/2025 or just go to the main website, click on the link and do the form. Vote for Alexi Sales Imaginary Sandwich Bar. Let's get him on the front page of everything, please.
Definitely. Do you see the Golden Globes? Ricky Gervais's latest Netflix special got...
I'm shocked.
It is so shit. It is so unbelievably shit.
How could it win? Why did it win?
Just
because they feel like they owe him because he's hosted
host it. Yeah, probably. Yeah, let's have an award for something good for a change rather than something diabolical.
He's such an arrogant cock.
He is very.
Yeah, I hate him. Such a shame because we loved The Office, didn't we?
We did. I only met him once, I think. I used to write for the Radio Times sometimes. It was Radio Times Award, and he was there. I went and said hello to him, and he said, oh, you know, because he used to live around here, and he said, oh, you were our local celebrity, you know. So I was like, oh, yeah. But then I've never been, you know, when people really barrel you out the way to get to him, I've never been, I think I was shoulder charged, like, by Helen Mirren, I seem to remember. Just people were so eager to... talk to him that I didn't get much further than that really before I was kind of yoiked out of the way by various other ages. Ambitious celebrities.
Well, everyone wanted to get on his bloody extras show at that time.
I suppose yeah.
So I'm guessing really during that time.
Yeah. I remember, but yeah,
he's a very insular guy now. Like, no one really. He doesn't offer any opportunities to anyone, so I doubt he...
As popular.
Yeah, I doubt he's as popular.
That it's such a bad show, that mortality, in every way possible.
Oh, It's not called mortality. So it's called something to do with life. Life.
It's called mortality. It's called
mortality. Oh, the stand-up show.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, I didn't. I don't. I haven't watched a Ricky Gervais special since.
It's terrible.
It's just that when I was young, when I was literally like in my mid twenties, I'd watch it and I'd remember his first couple. What was it called? Science or Politics? Maybe those. That was the name of the first two. I'd watch it and laugh because it was so like, oh, he's the only one who dares to say the fucking thing that no one dares to say. And that was just, that's why it was funny.
Yeah.
And it really takes, you grow older and you learn.
Yeah.
That's not what being funny is. Just what
hurt. And I think I know Stuart feels, and now Robin Intrius, he stole a lot of that from, or took a lot of that, shall we say, from Stuart and...
I saw him fucking live and Robin Ince was supporting him.
Yeah, Robin Ince has turned against him now, though.
I'm sure. And I'd love to ask Robin about that if he
let's get him on.
He's well up for it.
And let's do that, yeah.
And his
recent- he's interviewing me. We should plug the stuff, much neglected Alexis House stuff, which has been, there's a special show and showing at the Bristol Slapstick Festival in February, me being interviewed by Robin Ince, trying to revive stuff, right, place it in its true pantheon of...
It does belong there, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's fucking well, it does. It was an amazing show. Much disregarded.
Bristol Slapstick Festival. It's on at the Bristol Beacon, Alexi Sayles Stuff Revisited, as part of the Slapstick Festival 2026. It's on Saturday, the 7th of February at 4:30 in the Lantern Hall at the Bristol Beacon. All right. Join Alexis Sayle for a rare live discussion revisiting his groundbreaking 1980s television series. I imagine they'll be playing some clips and shit.
Mm.
Let's get Robin on before that then to plug it.
All right. Yeah.
Let's try and get him on really soon, maybe even next week. I'll talk to
him.
Okay, I've gotten quite friendly with him now. He's really, really nice. Fuck yeah. Another plug to do is to just let you know about the Patreon. Go to patreon.com/AlexiSayle Podcast. That's patreon.com/AlexiSayle Podcast. And support the show, please. Please keep the show going. We never want to have adverts on the show. We have no budget. Keep spreading the word.
Please, vote for me. Yeah.
Vote for Alexi on comedy.co.uk. Leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to the podcast.
Yes.
Even if you don't think it's 5 stars, don't leave a 4-star review. Leave a 5-star review and then write in the thing.
Yeah.
Write in the thing, I want to give it 3 stars, but just because I want to support the show, here's 5 stars.
Yeah.
I don't care. if you see either of us in the street, what's your dream? If someone sees you in the street, I get loads of messages from people saying, I saw Alexi in the Walthamstow shopping centre and he was eating a tin of baked beans cold with a spoon and I wasn't sure if it was him or not. So if someone sees you in the street, what do you want them to do?
That wasn't me. I don't know, you say hello if you want. I'm not, you know, I don't mind. It's not like it happens all the time.
Can they come up to you and say, you were shit in Keen Eddie? Is that what it's called? Like a little code to let you know that they listen to the podcast. You know what I mean?
It's a bit complicated to say, oh, shit in Keen Eddie.
Okay, you were the best thing in Keen Eddie.
You were the best things in Keen Eddie. I don't know how they would have possibly have seen it.
They wouldn't have, but it's like a code. And if someone comes up and says, you were the best thing in Keen Eddie, you know they're a podcast fan.
Right. I'll know that they listen to the podcast. Then. Yes. Or why do you think the HE111 didn't win the Luftwaffe contract in 1935?
That's too circular not to end the podcast there.
All right, good. Okay, bye-bye. You've been listening to the Alexi Sayle Podcast. This show is produced and edited by Talal Karkouti. Music by Tarbush Records. Thanks to Audio Boom for hosting us. Please keep your emails coming in at alexislpodcast@gmail.com. Goodbye.